We'll hear argument now in the case of United States against Todd.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Doug Smith, and I represent appellant Vincent Todd along with my co-counsel Beth Larson. Mr. Todd is a disabled veteran who's been diagnosed with a severe psychological disorder, including delusional behavior. Nonetheless, he was permitted to represent himself in the proceedings below and was convicted after a three-day trial. Mr. Todd challenges his conviction on three grounds.
What do you think should have been done in this case?
Once the district court had evidence questioning Mr. Todd's competency, it should have ordered a competency hearing. It should have undertaken a thorough and formal inquiry
That examination, or report of that examination, is part of the record now, I gather. It wasn't made, it wasn't used at all. If we read it, and sitting as a district judge, would I be inclined to do exactly what you said? That is, find there is a problem with his competence?
Yes, Your Honor. It was raised by Mr. Todd's counsel at one of the pretrial hearings and submitted to the district court, which was specifically requested to review it.
And he ordered him to be examined, right?
Yes, and the district court ordered the examination. And in that report, it states that Mr. Todd has a severe and significant psychopathology. It states that he has delusional behavior. It also states that he didn't understand the seriousness of the crimes with which he was charged and didn't have an awareness or understanding about how that was wrong. Rather, he thought it was part of he had a paranoid belief that it was part of a conspiracy by the police. So based on all those at least raised an issue as to his competency that triggered a requirement under 18 U.S.C. 4241 that the district court should have sua sponte held a competency hearing. Moreover, the prosecutors in this case also raised questions about Mr. Todd's competency. They didn't have access to that report. It was submitted to the court. And
where is he now, by the way? Where is he now?
Mr. Todd? Mr. Todd is in the Chicago area, and he's not being incarcerated. That's my understanding. There have been issues regarding his supervised release. He's been incarcerated for some period, but my understanding is he isn't right now.
You've never been committed to an institution or anything of that nature?
Not to my knowledge, Your Honor, but he is. I believe that now he's seeking some sort of mental treatment from the Department of Veterans Affairs. That was a requirement of his supervised release. But in addition to that report, there were also the statements by the prosecutors where they were questioning his competency, even though they had not reviewed the report, just based on his behavior during the pretrial proceedings. And so that should have raised a question as well. And the court should have done that competency inquiry and then done the questioning and thorough review that's required under Sandals to ascertain whether Mr. Todd understood.
Was he sent somewhere like Springfield, or was that examination done in the MCC? Do you know?
I believe that it was done in the MCC, Your Honor.
That's what I gathered from it. I didn't see that he was ordered to Bureau of Prisons hospital to do that.
I believe that the report, I guess it doesn't.
That's all right. We'll check it out. You don't have to.
Then in this appeal, Mr. Todd is raising three issues, the first of which is his waiver of counsel during the pretrial proceedings. In addition to the issues regarding his competency, there's the fact that he wasn't giving any warnings at all during the pretrial proceedings before he waived his right to counsel. The district court's failure to give him any warnings whatsoever.
Was there any prejudice occurred, however, to him during the pretrial proceedings?
Well, first, Your Honor, I don't believe that prejudice is required because this is a right to have a full understanding before one waives one's right to counsel.
Well, but there was, before the magistrate, when a plea was entered, he was advised of his rights and what the charges were.
That's true, Your Honor. But there was prejudice from his not being represented during the pretrial proceedings because he wasn't able to develop a case At trial, he didn't offer any case in chief. He rested his case immediately after the prosecution had ended its case, and he could have introduced, for example, experts who would have testified about his significant memory problems, that he didn't knowingly try to bring a stun gun through airport security, but rather he had these significant memory problems.
That was the reason why he was dismissing his lawyers, that
they wanted to do
his lawyers wanted to make some kind of mental state defense, and he didn't agree with that and dismissed them.
Your Honor, I believe
so. It's hardly the case that, you know, what he missed out on was the opportunity to make the same kind of defense that he had got rid of his lawyers for planning to make.
Well, I have 2 points on that issue, Your Honor. First, I believe that Mr. Todd, what he was really concerned about was a determination that he was incompetent, and that was what his lawyers were raising in the pretrial proceedings. But also, at trial, during his opening statement, he said that he had significant he had not remembered that he had the stun gun in his bag. And I don't believe that Mr. Todd, especially at the trial, once it came to trial, had any objection to arguing that he had memory problems that prevented him from knowingly bringing the stun gun through airport security. His objection, at least in the pretrial proceedings, was the implication that he was crazy in any way. But the fact that he had these memory problems, that was something that he argued to the jury in his opening. But because he was representing himself during the pretrial proceedings, he didn't have any evidence to present to support that during the trial. So back to the 3 points that we're raising on appeal. The first was the failure of the government, of the court, to give any warnings whatsoever during the pretrial proceedings. There's no response by the government to that issue in its brief, and that alone should warrant reversal.
Why is it required if you are waiving by conduct? Now, one of the things we keep saying is that after you've dismissed a bunch of lawyers, the judge can say, "Now this is your last chance." It's a case of waiver by conduct. And it's almost impossible to imagine the warning business other than the warning, if you dismiss this last lawyer, you've had it. I mean, normally we think of these warnings as somebody who shows up on the first day and says, I want to go it alone. It's a different package of things that happens in waiver by conduct cases, one might think. Have we ever said otherwise?
Well, I believe in Sandals, the court said there are certain minimum requirements for a warning, and that
in waiver by conduct cases?
Well, Sandals did mention waiver by conduct as an issue, and I believe the government cited it for that point. So it recognized that there was this line of authority that the court has regarding waiver by conduct. Nonetheless, I believe in Sandals, the court stated that there was a minimum requirement of a warning. And I believe that's consistent with the Supreme Court's law on this subject. And also, in the first time that he waived his right to counsel, there wasn't any history of getting rid of lawyers. This was the first lawyer, and there was no warning. There was no history there of any kind of conduct.
Well, there was another lawyer appointed.
Yeah, there were three total.
I mean, the judge just said, okay, we'll appoint another lawyer.
Yes. Well, there were three lawyers appointed, but at the beginning,
Seriatim.
And the third was after the judge said there won't be a third. And then the judge provided a third.
Yeah.
And well, your client kicked it over again.
Well, just getting back to the bottom line is there's no manipulation here because it's undisputed that Mr. Todd had these significant mental problems, and the government itself in the district court below didn't say there was any kind of games playing or manipulation. The government rather said, I think that Mr. Todd has a problem and the court should look into his competency. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Smith. Mr. Gerland.
Good morning, Your Honors. Mr. Smith, may it please the Court. Michael Gerland on behalf of the United States. This case is not about whether or not Vincent Todd would have been better off with a lawyer or should have had a lawyer. It's about whether a defendant who admittedly suffers from paranoia but who the record shows is otherwise competent should be allowed to waive the assistance of counsel. And the record shows that Judge Guzman was aware of the dilemma that he was in. And indeed, when the district court has a defendant like Vincent Todd who wants to waive assistance, the district court judge is in a trick bag because no matter what he or she does, he's going to be appealed. If he forces a lawyer on that defendant, that decision is going to be second-guessed. And if the judge determines that the defendant's competent or doesn't need to have a lawyer, the judge is going to be obviously second-guessed, given that we're here. The record shows that Judge Guzman, because he was aware of it, bent over backwards to cut Vincent Todd every break, to make sure that he had a fair trial, to make sure there was no prejudice. And indeed, with regard to the question about whether or not he was prejudiced by the dismissal of Eugene Steigel, the answer is no, Your Honor. What happened was that Vincent Todd went back to the MCC, filed a half a dozen motions, we returned to court, and Judge Guzman said, I'm going to give you a third attorney because I can't understand the basis of these motions. They were, in fact, frivolous motions, but he was given a third attorney and there was no prejudice, which is why the government didn't waste any ink responding to that argument. It's offensive, I think, that the heart of the appeal is that the judge somehow encouraged this defendant to waive counsel or wasn't concerned with this defendant's rights, given all that Judge Guzman did to ensure Vincent Todd's rights and to ensure that there was a fair trial. And indeed, there's no argument or no basis for an argument that the trial was not fair or that some prejudicial information was allowed before the jury. Vincent Todd was given a fair trial. Indeed, Judge Guzman, rather than encouraging Vincent Todd to forego the benefit of a lawyer, provided Vincent Todd with three lawyers. He only admitted him to proceed pro se after admonishing him in the clearest language possible. He told him it was dangerous. He told him he would be ineffective. He told him the prosecution would have a large advantage. He clearly did not want Vincent Todd to forego this right. He wanted to make sure that Vincent Todd did so, that he understood what he was giving up. And despite all that, the judge did not let Vincent Todd proceed without the assistance of counsel because he required Vincent Todd to have standby counsel. And the record shows that throughout the proceedings and throughout the trial, Vincent Todd turned to, was advised by, and spoke with Gerald Collins. He consulted him with regard to objections, with regard to evidentiary issues. Jerry Collins handled some motions. And indeed, when we get to the jury instruction portion of the trial, Vincent Todd put up his hands and let counsel take over. So he did, in fact, although he was proceeding pro se, he did have the assistance of counsel. Above all else, the record shows that Vincent Todd was competent to proceed pro se. Judge Guzman was in a great position to judge that, I submit, because he had an incredible amount of interaction with Vincent Todd. He painstakingly, thoroughly addressed about 24 motions that Vincent Todd crafted. The judge went out of his way to evaluate and understand what Vincent Todd was doing. He was in a good position to understand his waiver and to understand his motives. Separate and apart from that, Judge Guzman was given, and the government was not given, this private psychological evaluation that Mary
did.
Mary Judge, who was Vincent Todd's first lawyer from the federal defender, had the evaluation done.
Yeah, but who did the evaluation?
It was done at the MCC.
It was a PhD in psychology.
Not a psychiatrist, a psychologist. That was my understanding.
Yes. And although the government didn't have that report at the time, Judge Guzman did. And although the report does find that Vincent Todd suffers from paranoia, the last sentence of the summary of the opinions of that report, which has now been attached to the reply brief, says, with regard to his attempting to board a plane with a weapon in his bag, it appears that his behavior is more related to poor judgment, impulsivity, and the need ultimately for some form of protection, as opposed to a premeditated plan to use this weapon against others in a violent or aggressive manner. That's what the government argued to the jury. I wish I had this report because it shows that he knew what he was doing. He wasn't so deluded that he didn't realize he had packed a stun gun. He packed a stun gun because he needed to defend himself. And in fact, he was getting on that plane to answer gun possession charges in L.A.
I have a modest question. Paranoia is a paranoid personality is different than being paranoid. Paranoid is a medical definition or medical diagnosis, particularly. Do you know what the condition, the present condition of Illinois law, as to whether a psychiatrist or a psychologist can diagnose or get?
I don't, Your Honor. I will say that the record was clear that Vincent Todd didn't trust the.
Well, he was a paranoid personality, no question at all. But, there are probably two or three of them in the room at the moment, but I want to know whether there's any indication that that sort of behavior pattern prevents you from waiving a jury or waiving a lawyer.
And I try to find a case dealing with that issue and could not find
a case where
someone being paranoid therefore rendered him incompetent.
Well, being paranoid is different.
Clinical
behavior
diagnosis.
His behavior is unquestionably paranoid.
I couldn't find a case where that happened. And the record, I will say, shows that Vincent Todd was competent. He explained the charges to the jury.
Yeah.
He understood what sentence he was facing. I didn't respond to the statements that the defense attorney thinks shows Vincent Todd didn't understand the sentencing, but he actually understood the guidelines. He understood before trial that he was looking at 0 to 6 months, that after trial under the guidelines he was looking at 10 to 14 months, putting aside the enhancement.
To get back to this competency issue, the judge didn't act under – this was a report ordered by his counsel. It wasn't under the provisions where the judge noticed something sua sponte orders him examined, was it?
Correct. There was a concern about the defendant's dangerousness, Your Honor, because
But to get back, when a judge orders it, he doesn't have a psychologist do it. They go away and have a psychiatrists and other professionals examine them. That wasn't the case in this.
Correct. This was
a private report, which is why you didn't see it.
Correct. And the
question is, should the judge sua sponte have?
I would submit not, Your Honor, because based on the record and based on his interactions with Vincent Todd, it was clear that he understood what was going on in court. He was able to speak to the judge when he was before the jury. He was not obstreperous or recalcitrant like he was with the judge. He knew what was expected of him. And that report, as I said, shows that he was, in fact, competent. That's what his lawyers represented.
Well, he was certainly acting against his own interest, and he was acting kind of goofy. You have to admit that. My understanding was that the government indicated they thought he was a little off whack.
The reason I believe that the former prosecutor had raised this issue had to do with Vincent Todd's concern that Vincent Todd was dangerous. He had cut the brakes.
Well, I don't care what the motivation was. He acted enough goofy so that somebody suggested he ought to be checked out. Am I correct in my analysis of the record?
And what I'm saying, Your Honor, it's my understanding that the former prosecutor on the case...
They didn't fire the prosecutor because he did this, did
no.
they?
No. But he was... He was the
prosecutor, yes.
Vincent Todd was out based on certain conditions. He violated those conditions. He was being detained prior to trial, and there was a question as to whether or not he could be released.
I don't doubt the fear of... all paranoid people that are paranoid are dangerous by definition. There's no benign form of paranoia.
I understand, but
his fear was real.
That was the concern, and from his lawyer's perspective, whatever concerns they had were clearly taken care of because they all represented to the court after seeing this report and after speaking with the defendant that they thought he understood the case, he understood the charges, and that he was competent to proceed.
Okay.
With regard to the Brady issue, if there are no more questions regarding the competency issue, let me just simply say the documents were produced. The record shows that the October 6th letter of the government that went along with the production is in the record. The documents actually sat on defendant's table throughout the trial. Be that as it may, the information contained in one of those documents that's been brought before the court on appeal concerns defendant's medical history. It was known to him. It could not have been suppressed from him. And indeed, that was the very thing he didn't want the government to have or know about or put before the jury. He moved to prevent us from raising that issue before the jury. So it's ironic that that is now the focus of his appeal. And if there are no more questions, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Gerland. Anything further, Mr. Smith?
Before you leap into it, Mr. Smith, let's assume that the court takes the position that you've advanced. What do? Remand it back down for a hearing?
A year has been passed, Your Honor.
Yeah, but I want to know what you think we ought to do. Years have passed. I know that. What I want to know is, do you think we ought to remand it back down there for hearing to find out whether he was, in fact, sufficiently off-centered so that they should not have permitted either the trial to go forward or him to do it, represent himself?
Yes, Your Honor, I think the conviction should be vacated and there should be a new hearing unless the court,
all right. Now,
unless the district court concludes perhaps he's on medication now.
Yeah, I would say if we have have a hearing now, so determine that he is off. Does he recognize, you've conferred with him, I assume?
Well, I haven't conferred with him recently, but I have conferred with
him. You have conferred with him. Yes. So he's in accordance with what you're asking us to do?
Yes, to vacate his commitment.
And that means that if he goes down, we don't just vacate it and send him off wandering. We vacate it and send it back down and say, okay, let's have a hearing. And he's adjudicated to be insane or be incompetent or something. Does he realize that might send him right back into a confinement position?
Yes, he recognizes that. But, Your Honor, I believe that the psychological report indicated that if he was taking medication, that would...
Well, that's the psychological report that we're not going to rely on when we send it back down, because that's already been before the court.
Yes, Your Honor.
So we get a new psychiatric evaluation. It's pointed out by Judge Keeney. He goes to a psychiatrist. He's confined during the period of time he's there. Does he know all that?
Yes, Your Honor, he understands that. I don't think that. I think he'll still.
He's got sufficient.
I think he'll still maintain that he's.
He's got sufficient understanding to understand that, but not sufficient understanding to.
And that if he's deemed incompetent, he may then be detained indefinitely pending trial.
Yes, Your Honor, I believe he understands that to the extent he can understand these things.
Duration terminal.
And that if Booker is affirmed, he would then be tried again. If Booker is affirmed, he would then be tried again and sentenced without regard to the guidelines and could end up with 5 years imprisonment.
I haven't discussed that.
He knows all of these things.
that part I haven't discussed.
If he knows all of these things and still wants it to go back, that would suggest that, in fact, he's not competent.
Well, I think he would like to have the conviction erased from his record, Your Honor.
That's the one thing that won't happen.
The one thing I'd like to point out, I don't really have any time left, but just to point
sure
Your
you
Honor's day.
As long as we ask questions, you got time.
A38, I'm going to just quote from what the government said in the proceedings below.
Right.
Quote, the government would at this time like to at least raise the issue of competency. It's a concern of ours. There's been a couple of occasions that the attorneys were conspiring with the government, and I want to at least bring that before the court. So
838 being the?
That was the 6/20/03 pretrial hearing, and that was the U.S. attorney. So this idea that there's no issue about competency, that's wrong. That was specifically raised by the government in the proceedings below. Its position was there was an issue about competency.
Well, but that technically leads to the judge doing the kind of order, having him report for examination, which didn't occur.
Yes, right? Your Honor.
Yeah. You were appointed, weren't you?
Yes, I was appointed.
You're a noble soul.
Thank you very
much. Mr. Smith, we want to thank you and your firm for undertaking the work and the assistance you've been both your client to us. The case is taken under advisement.